Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
Can you believe it? I've been doing this for a week now. Tony, I think, I don't know if Tony's back tomorrow or not, but I do know that this is the last day you and I are going to be together, ladies and gentlemen. I am Andrew Langer, in for Tony Katz today, on Tony Katz today. Not sure if we're going to get Tony Katz today. In fact, I need to text Tony to find out if he's still on a plane somewhere or sleeping it all off. I don't know. But I am in for Tony today. We got a jam-packed show coming up. Singer Natasha Owens is going to join us. Scott Shepard from the Free Enterprise Project. Robert Bork Jr. Matt Welch from Reason is going to talk to us about the State of the Union, because that's today. And then Devin Westhill, he's going to talk to us about SCOTUS and SCOTUS deciding not to take a particularly important case this year on high school admissions and equity and just what that means. And yet, we are going to talk about the State of the Union. I got a story to tell in advance, though, and I'm going to want your input on this. Unfortunately, my Facebook is still down. So you can't message me. Actually, theoretically, you can. Not to get too into details. You can message me on my Facebook Messenger, facebook.com/AndrewLangerShow. You can message me there. But I would really rather that you at me on Twitter, @Andrew_Langer. On Twitter, please message me there. I had this thing happen to me. So, little known secret, again, peeling back behind the curtain into my life. You know, when I fill in for Tony, obviously it changes the makeup of my day, because I'm on, you know, from noon to 3 Eastern. And so I decide, you know, on these days, you know, I'm not going to go and do breakfast and then not have lunch. I've been having brunch, so I'll go and have brunch. And where I live, we have a lot of pancake houses. Anyway, so I would go out and get a little brunch, you know, so something here and there. Today I went to a diner near my house, decided to sit at the counter, which is what I do because I'm dining by myself. And I don't know about the rest of you, but we all know that there is diner etiquette. And I'm sitting there. There's only one guy sitting at the counter. He's sitting kind of in the middle. There are plenty of seats. So I sit, you know, a seat down from him. I want to sit in a particular side of the counter. I don't sit on the end so that nobody can sit next to me on the one side. And there's a space between. The point is, there's a space between me and the gentleman to my left. And I'm sitting there. The two of us are sitting there. He's, you know, getting to the end of his meal. and I'm sitting there. I've just ordered my food. And some guy comes in and sits between me and the guy to my left. Like, right to my left. I mean, directly adjacent to me to my left. I'm like, this is really weird. Doesn't this guy know basic counter etiquette? You're not supposed to do this. And I'm a big guy. You see me. Y'all know I'm a big guy. A lot of us radio gentlemen are gentlemen of larger carriage. That's part of how you get the great timber in my voice. And so I need a little bit of room. And so this guy is literally sitting there just to my left. And I'm like, this is strange. And it's breakfast time, but he orders the meatloaf platter, which I also found really weird. And I go and I'm like, do I move? That would be really odd if I move over. My buddy Jerry, the aforementioned Jerry of Andrew and Jerry Save the World, my podcast partner, the editor of Real Clear Policy. I talked to Jerry this story afterwards. It's like we're a Robert Frost poem. By the way, there's a Robert Frost anniversary today. I'll tell you about Robert Frost poem. Somewhere ages and ages hence, I will be telling this story. Do I move over? I'm like, no, that would also be weird. And I said that it would be, you know, not more than a little passive aggressive. And Jerry said passive aggressive. No, it would be aggressive aggressive. Finally, the guy finishes before I do. Now, that was also interesting because he ordered after I did. But I guess he was getting their meatloaf blue plate special at 10:30 in the morning, which is odd. And he leaves. And I turn to the waitress and I'm like, was that strange? Am I the only one? By the way, the other guy had left, the guy who was on the other side. So it was literally for a good 15, 20 minutes there. It was just the two of us sitting at this counter next to each other like we were on a date. And the waitress said, yeah, we all noticed and we all found it a little odd. And apparently this was the topic of conversation amongst the wait staff at this particular diner this morning. So I put it to all of you. Was that weird? I mean, again, eight seats at the counter, two of us sitting there. The guy sits right between us like he's trying to split the pins on a seven, trying to make a 7-10 split there, you know, right down the middle, sitting between us. It was very odd. What would you do in this situation? And am I wrong for thinking that this is very strange to me? At @Andrew_Langer is how you get a hold of me. Sorry, I just wonder how I wanted to tee this off with something completely mundane out of my own personal life. There is other stuff going on in the world. Yes, tonight is the State of the Union. Yes, it is the latest State of the Union, televised State of the Union in televised State of the Union history. That's very strange. One wonders. Listen, the only thing that we all really need to wonder about is just how Biden is going to appear. And as I said yesterday, and I mean this only slightly tongue-in-cheek, when I say Biden's going to be hopped up on goofballs, which is a Simpsons reference, that what I mean is they're going to pump him full of whatever drugs they give him to make him look focused and energetic. That's what they've done. That's what they've allegedly done in the past. But as you know, Joe Biden, he gets up there. If he's been given his ability to rest, if he's been given his Adderall, Ritalin, whatever, to keep him sort of nailed down. Yeah, he'll give an energetic speech to sort of belie this idea that there is something wrong with him. So there's that. And we already know what, so, but we just don't know. We don't know what his appearance is going to be, and whatever mistakes. We're all going to be waiting for some kind of mistake to be made. I wouldn't hold my breath. Again, they pretty carefully choreograph this stuff, and they're well aware of his neurophysical history, and what to do about it. And we know what the themes are. We know that they've been teasing him all week, even though they said they haven't been teasing him all week. Biden is going to claim that he's done more in the first 3 years than any president in history, certainly more than any president does in two terms. He is going to talk about the strength of the economy. He's going to talk about when there are deficits within the economy, you know, things like the junk fee issue and the credit card late fee issue and the shrinkflation issue. He is taking steps to ameliorate those things without, of course, engaging in any kind of culpability on his home front. He's going to say that we shouldn't be worried about the border, and that, you know, any problems that are at the border are Republicans' fault and his predecessors' fault, and any problems in America today are not Joe Biden's fault, but they're all Donald Trump's fault. And we have historic unemployment in America, even though we don't really have historic unemployment in America. So they're going to be, in fact, later on, part of what we're going to talk about on the show today is the big lie, right? Or more to the point, how many little lies add up to the very big lie. You know, it's like what we talk about with the regulatory state. That, yes, there are big ticket items that impact the American economy, but it also is, you know, the regulatory cost to Americans is death by a thousand pinpricks that all add up to a very big burden on Americans. It's the same thing with the lies that they tell. And so I'm going to focus later on in the show about one very specific lie, or one very specific instance. A panel on Super Tuesday evening on MSNBC, and how in one segment it demonstrates all of these lies. In fact, we'll do that after the news at 12:30. We're going to be joined in a couple of minutes by Natasha Owen. She's a singer. I want to start off a little bit light today before we get into the really heavy stuff. I am Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today. Welcome back, everybody. I'm sorry. I'm just sort of grooving on this music a little bit more. What you're listening to right now is the new song by Natasha Owens. She is a singer, songwriter. This is the song Party People. She is the also the woman who sang the song Trump Won. She's joining me right now. Natasha, I can't help but smile when I listen to this, but that's the blessing of music, isn't it?
It sure is. Fantastic. I'm so glad you are smiling and loving it.
Yeah, I mean, it's so nice. The chorus of this, Party People in the House, Put Your Hands Up High. I can't tell the difference from the left to the right. Elephants and, I'm going to use the word, donkeys who don't know good from evil. Yes. Ain't my kind of party people. I mean, it really is talking about, I mean, it summarizes, it encapsulates the real difficulty that a lot of folks have in distinguishing between the two traditional party systems. Talk about that, please.
Well, I think there is still two party systems. I think you've got the Uniparty, which is the RINOs and the, I call them Judas Republicans, and the Democrats. And then you've got the Patriots, the MAGA, Make America Great Again, America First movement. And I think that's the two that are warring within themselves right now. I just got sick and tired of not only U.S. politics, but Texas politics, having these RINOs that they're in power. They know exactly how to stop this evil initiative that the Democrats are throwing at our country. They're destroying it, and they refuse to do anything about it. So I thought it was pertinent to not only write about them, sing about them, but put their faces in a music video.
Well, this is what I appreciate about this. It's that, you know, for me, I love music. I love music. I mean, folks who've heard me on these airwaves know that I am you know, infatuated with it. Can't play an instrument worth a darn. I can't sing worth a darn at all. Though I do love to sing. So if you're ever with me at karaoke, you're gonna have to cringe and bear it. But you know, since I was a kid, I've loved protest music. And all different kinds of protest music. And normally, of course, protest music is coming out from the left, you know, whether, you know, you're talking about Bob Dylan or you're talking about Crosby, Stills and Nash or Neil Young, you know, right, whether or not you're talking about Joni Mitchell. I mean, you know, things that I love, or going into things like rap, where you're talking about Grandmaster Flash and songs like The Message or Public Enemy, Fight the Power, or it Blues and Soul, et cetera, et cetera. My point is, there is this great tradition of music being used for political protest, and very little of it coming from the patriotic side of things. Talk about that. I mean, were you also interested in all in protest music, or did you sort of come to this in a slightly different, from a slightly different direction?
Completely different direction. Yeah. And, you know, the Democrats have embraced this message through song. Song is so powerful. Music is so powerful. And the Republicans and the conservative movement haven't quite embraced it yet. We are waking them up to that, how powerful it is. When 1 in 5 voters say that they will vote for whoever Taylor Swift tells them to vote for, that tells you how powerful music is. My musical journey, I come from a musical family, but I was had tremendous anxiety. So I never wanted a stage presence. God has a very funny sense of humor. back in 2010, my dad died cleaning his guns at a table. Oh. A bullet hit him in the heart. And I downsprouted into a deep depression. It was music that crossed my path and saved my life. If God had not done that, I wouldn't be alive today. So I started out in contemporary Christian, have 4 albums, a Christmas album, and then I decided to do a patriotic album during COVID because I saw how our freedoms were being infringed upon and how amazing our freedom is. It's something that's the most expensive thing that we own, that we certainly don't deserve, and how people around me in my communities were begging for their freedom to be taken away for a false sense of security. And I said, okay, we've got a problem here. So I did a patriotic album, which Nashville frowned upon because the contemporary music scene in Nashville is very progressive and woke.
Which is crazy, Democratic, when you consider the ties of country music. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Natasha.
I know it. I know. Well, country is not as bad as contemporary Christian, believe it or not. And the churches are very progressive. So they frowned upon that. And then I did a pro-life song that I put on that album. And that was the thing that kind of sparked an ignition there in Nashville. I had radio stations and promoters firing me off of events because I was too pro-life in a Christian genre. I mean, that doesn't even make sense to me. Right. And I was so angry about that I said, you know what? Do I really want to be a part of a genre that doesn't stand up for life? And so my husband had been saying for 2 years I needed to do a Trump One song, which I knew would blow, completely destroy my career in Nashville because they're very anti-Trump there. But I said, you know what? I am going to veer. I'm going to turn towards politics, and I'm going to illuminate on two things. One, on a platform of truth. And the second thing is, if we're being censored on something and the voice of the people is being taken away, I want to give that back. I want to give them an anthem to sing it, because right. I'm covered under a little bit different protections than people just talking it. So we came out with Trump One, and we just decided to hit things like the Second Amendment, which I'm very pro Second Amendment, even though my
sure.
dad died of a gun. And my uncle also was murdered with a gun. But I see that if we do not have a Second Amendment, we do not have our First Amendment protections.
Right.
That's what's securing our freedom. So I've just veered and walking this path that I believe God is illuminating. I don't know why I'm on it, but we're just going to hit things of truth.
Well, here's what I appreciate about your music. And again, we're talking with Natasha Owens. She's got her latest studio album is called American Patriot. Is available online and elsewhere. We've had this conversation. I had this conversation with somebody else while we were at CPAC. It's the issue of starting from the music itself, starting from the creativity and the singability. Singability, that's a word. The singability of the music, the humability. It's funny. I know he's on the other side of the political spectrum, but Stephen Sondheim says in the musical Merrily Roll Along, there's not a tune you can hum. We need a tune that goes bump, bump, bumpy, dum. Give us a tune that goes bump, bump, bumpy, dum. Anyway, the point is there's a humability there. We've for too many years, conservative artists have started with their conservatism. They haven't led with the music. You lead with the music here, and that makes all the difference, doesn't it?
It does. I sang at CPAC, both at the Reagan yes. Dinner and on the main stage last year. I started CPAC out with a concert. They're beginning to see, especially in my Texas area, because I've sang a lot lately, that when you bring candidates up to speak, it's very boring, especially on the conservative
yeah.
Republican side. But if you intertwine it with music that goes along with country and, our patriotism, and has messaging that goes along with what we're fighting for, it makes it more like a concert with
right.
some speakers, right? And it makes it a lot of entertaining, and it energizes, it gives a new sense of direction, I guess. It energizes and gives people courage to keep going, right?
100%.
So, people
need an anthem. They need anthems for their times to move forward. Where in Texas are you, if you don't mind my asking?
We're in North Dallas.
Okay. All right. There you go. It's funny because I was going to say, if you're going to say Austin, I have a friend, I have a friend, Horace Cooper, says the great thing about Austin is that it's so close to Texas. So,
I
get that. So, what's next for you? The album is out. It's getting great notes. What's next? Any idea what's next on your agenda?
Yeah, so the American Patriot album is half covers, half originals. That was done 2 years ago. We're coming out with an album that's going to hit by summertime that's going to be called Trump One. All of the singles that we've done thus far and the ones that we're about to come out with are going to go on that album, that 10-song album. So that's going to be called Trump One. Look out for that. You can buy the singles that have been released now anywhere you buy music digitally, but they will be on a physical product come summertime. So just stay tuned. We're hitting topics like, I'm doing a Christian song that's patriotic, that's from Psalms. It says, blessed is our nation whose God is our Lord.
Sure.
I feel that needs to be declared upon the U.S. because that's our root. And we're coming out with a gender song. We're coming out with a cowboy versus leftist type song.
Nice.
Of a female wanting a cowboy, not a guy in a man bun or a military soldier in heels, that type thing. So we're gonna continue to hit these bold topics and put a little bit of humor, a little bit of tongue in cheek with it, and hopefully we can make a difference out there in this big battle we have to win.
Natasha Owens, we got to leave it there. So glad to have you on today. We needed something positive and uplifting. The website is natashaowensmusic.com. You can find her on all those platforms. Natasha Owens and Owens, best of luck to you.
Yes.
That was Natasha Owens. Listen, when we return, We're going to talk about the big lie. Oh, and John Kerry stepped in it big time yesterday. You'd love to see Frankenstein doing that. Oh, and you know, later on the show, we got Scott Shepard joining us, Robert Bork Jr., Matt Welch from Reason, Devin Westall. I'm Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today. Everybody, I am Andrew Langer. I am in for Tony Katz Today. On Tony Katz Today, so glad you can join me. You know, it's always we're so glad I can join you. As I've said this, for those of you who haven't tuned in with me before, I you know, this is a real privilege for me. I am Andrew Langer. I do a lot of radio. I've got the podcast. I'll talk more about the podcast later on in the show. And I'm also director of the Center for Regulatory Freedom at the CPAC Foundation, dealing with these regulatory issues that are so near and dear. In fact, I should have asked Natasha Owens if she could do a song about regulation. I would like to see that. I'd just like to see someone try. As I was teeing up the show, I was talking about the issue of the many little lies leading up to the big lie. This is what we're going to hear tonight from Joe Biden. Lots of things lots of little lies that add together create the big lie that everything is all right with the country and that the state of the union is strong. You know, and part of it comes into the little lie that Joe Biden is competent, and some of it comes into that, you know, the unemployment is at its lowest level in history, and that, you know, that we've defeated inflation, and, you know, wages are up. Can you get into that in a second? I want to start here. One of the problems we have, obviously, is that we've got lots of different kinds of Americans, and we you know, as part of the tribe. In the tribalism that we have, if you are a part of the Never Trumper tribe, or you've gone full Trump derangement syndrome, chances are you may not even be listening to NPR anymore. You probably are, but you're definitely watching MSNBC, and you're getting all of your information from MSNBC. MSNBC has really pulled on the Never Trump, anti-Trump, Trump is the devil mantra. And I want to tee it up first with this. This is not part of the big lie, but here is Joe Scarborough from yesterday talking about Joe Biden. Let's play cut number 7.
But comparing that guy's mental state, I've said it for years now. He's cogent. I undersold him when I said he was cogent. He's far beyond cogent. In fact, I think he's better than he's ever been intellectually. Analytically, because he's been around for 50 years. And, you know, I don't know if people know this or not. Biden used to be a hothead. Sometimes that Irishman would get in front of the reasoning. Sometimes he would say things he didn't want to say. This is, and I don't really, you know what, I don't really care. Start your tape right now, because I'm about to tell you the truth. And F you if you can't handle the truth. This version of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever.
That is
not a close second.
Insane.
I've known him for years.
All right, we can stop it. That is insane. I mean, that is literally Kevin Bacon in Animal House screaming during the riot, saying, "Remain calm, all is well." By the way, Joe Scarborough is just looking weird. And I know we're going to have a couple of these instances today where I know I'm not supposed to punch down on the air, but Joe Scarborough is looking a little weird. His hair looks weird. His face looks weird. He's got the whole tough guy. Hey, if you can't handle the truth that I'm laying down, well, F you. What? This Joe Biden is the best Joe Biden. We get his ire up. He doesn't do that anymore. No, he just, you know, he calls out Peter Ducey. He called some guy a lying dog faced pony soldier, whatever that means. Oh, and by the way, that is the best intellectual Joe Biden out there. That's not even the big lie. I just wanted to tee it up by giving you an example of some of the reporting, quote unquote reporting that MSNBC is doing. So on Super Tuesday, there was a whole panel, and the panel had Lawrence O'Donnell and Joanne Reed. I want to say that Rachel Maddow was on, I don't remember offhand. Jen Psaki was on the panel, and Stephanie Ruhle was on the panel. And I'm going to play the whole clip here, and then I'm going to break it down. But if you listen to this clip carefully enough, There are lots of little lies in there. In fact, if I had my, I used to have a desk bell, a dinger. I would hit the dinger. But let's play cut number eight, the whole thing.
So, yes, we, like everybody else, rightfully say, man, this White House has to get their messaging down. But the American people also have to realize, holy cow, look at all these great things that have just happened for me. Did they think that happened out of thin air?
Right. Yeah.
Yes, they do. That's the problem.
They do. Everybody personalizes the benefits.
When those credit card bank fees, when that kicks in, no one's going to look. I mean, the people who need to look at that statement and go, oh, Joe Biden did that. They're not going to have any idea who did that. They won't know.
No,
but they don't, government work. I mean, we have a crisis of civics in this country. Mm-hmm. People actually don't know how these things change. And there is a sort of there's a systematic problem that politics, we talked about this before, is broken because the connection between politics and the things that happen in my life has been severed. Mm-hmm. People think when things go wrong, they look at the quarterback on the team, you know, like they do in football, right? When the team wins, the quarterback gets the credit. And when they lose, the quarterback gets the blame. So the things that hurt them, the things that make it harder to afford your life, they blame Biden. But the things that help, they think, as you said, I did great at my job. I got a raise. But there isn't a connection between the way that the government actually functions, which is what Democrats are good at, and the way you feel, which is what Republicans are good at.
Yeah.
I mean, I just got angrier and angrier as I listened to that. I did. It's just everything. And I broke it down for you because there's so much in there. I couldn't just play that and then turn around and go into the individual things. In fact, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to take a break here. And then when we come back, I'm going to spend a good chunk of time breaking down each individual segment of it. Because I edited it down into four distinct clips. So I'm Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Andrew Langer in for Tony Katz today. On Tony Katz Today, we're talking about the big lies, the little lies, and the gaslighting of America in this panel. It really, really is summed up by this, as my producer just said. And I agree with that. We played the long cut. I've broken it down. So let's start here. Here is Stephanie Ruhle with the introduction to the clip. Let's play cut nine.
So, yes, we, like everybody else, rightfully say, man, this White House has to get their messaging down. But the American people also have to realize, holy cow, look at all these great things that have just happened for me. Did they think that happened out of thin air?
Right.
So, again, it is MSNBC saying that it's a messaging problem. Well, it's a messaging problem. We're just not delivering the right message to the American people, you know, packaging it up, what the stuff that we're doing. If they just understood all these great things that we're doing, this really is Marxism at its best. And I don't throw that term around loosey-goosey. In this case, what I'm talking about is the propaganda. You know, we are taking the tenets of Marxism and we are repackaging them in the way so that the proletariat ought to understand. So while, you know, during the Soviet Russia, you know, there were these bread lines. There was great resource scarcity. But it was expressed as, you know, this is just how the workers' paradise is. You know, you don't understand the benefits of it. Yeah, you may be spending hours on end in bread lines or shoe lines or whatever lines to get these basic goods that the state has the privilege of giving to you or not. But it's all for your benefit, right? All the things that we're doing are for your benefit. Ignoring the reality out there, right? Which is every time I go fill up my tank, I can never be certain as to what the gas prices are going to be. Gas prices jumped up, as we know, 25 cents from last week to this one. That hits people right in the pocketbook. They do know that when they go to the store and either prices have gone up on certain goods or the portions that they're getting are smaller, the concept of shrinkflation. That's all because of what Joe Biden is doing. And by the way, it's not an unintended consequence. It's a feature of their economic approach to things. That's what they're saying. It gets better. Let's play. So we have that. Then Lawrence O'Donnell chimes in. Let's play cut number 10.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. That's the problem.
They do. Everybody personalizes the benefits.
When those credit card bank fees, when that kicks in, no one's going to look. I mean, the people who need to look at that statement and go, oh, Joe Biden did that. They're not going to have any idea who did that. They won't know.
Well, first of all, many of them, a lot of folks won't know because they're not paying their credit cards late. And the folks who are paying their credit cards late, they may understand this. But here's the downside to all of this. The thing that these people will never admit. Here's what's going to happen. Let me explain. Because it's the same thing that happened after Dodd-Frank went into effect. And this was predicted. You know, and we talked about this on Monday with John Burlaw from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. You know, they're working on this issue, the Recoup Act, which is going to give enormous power to the banks. When the banks had new regulations put on them in the wake of the 2008 financial services meltdown, it threw a lot of people out of banks because the banks could no longer charge for certain things and they had to guarantee certain other things in accounts. And so it as a way of ameliorating their risk, which is what banks have to do, any financial services agency has to do, the folks, you know, it made more people become what they call unbanked. That's what happens. What's going to happen here with the credit card companies is all of a sudden it's going to make it harder and harder for people to get access to credit and credit cards. They'll no longer have them. I don't know if they'll be canceled. I think a lot of them will. But as folks are moving in and trying to restore their credit and get access to credit, they're not going to have that. And what's going to happen is that the Lawrence O'Donnell, Stephanie Ruhle, Joanne Reed, et cetera, they're going to just blame the greedy banks for doing this. Listen, I know, like, we hate the concept of the payday lender, or as more accurately termed, the short-term high-risk lender, because we have this perception that the interest rates are much too high and people get on a treadmill. The reality is that for folks who have marginal credit but need access to money immediately for emergencies, unfortunately, this is where they want to go. And so when you crack down on the ability of these short-term high-risk lenders to mitigate the risk that they have in terms of their lending, well, that means that there's fewer money that's out there to be lent. There are fewer of these entities. What's the answer from the left on this? Well, they want to make, literally, this is no joke. It's no joke, folks. This is no joke. They want to make post offices the payday lender of choice. There's an effort to do that. Get rid of the actual short-term high-risk lending industry and replace it with some kind of government program. Then we get this really weird quote from Joanne Reed, which is long. And I actually took out, I also duplicated the last part of it. But I want you to hear this. This is up. Let's play cut number 11.
But they don't have government work. I mean, we have a crisis of civics in this country. Mm-hmm. People actually don't know how these things change. And there is a systematic problem that politics, we talked about this before, is broken because the connection between politics and the things that happen in my life has been severed. Mm-hmm. People think when things go wrong, they look at the quarterback on the team, you know, like they do in football, right? When the team wins, the quarterback gets the credit. And when they lose, the quarterback gets the blame. So the things that hurt them, the things that make it harder to afford your life, they blame Biden. But the things that help, they think, as you said, I did great at my job.
Stop right there, because we got the last bit. I have extra in there. We have a crisis of civics. Part of the reason why we have a crisis of civics is because of panels like this on MSNBC, which spread horse manure and call it the truth. People do understand when government does things in their favor, and they also understand, for the most part, I would submit, for some part, when government does things that harm them. I would submit that it's entities like MSNBC and the Joanne Reeds of the world that obfuscate when government is responsible for other things that go wrong in their lives. So, yeah, if you are receiving a free Obama phone, you understand that it's coming from the government. If you are receiving some kind of government assistance, you recognize that you're receiving that government assistance. But you don't understand when you can't get access to a credit card that it's because of the things that these nincompoops are talking about on the air, that's the reason. Or you can't get a bank account, or your bank account's been shut down. It's because of what these nincompoops are celebrating. Obviously, we know the role that government is playing in gas prices, though MSNBC doesn't want to tell you this. Access to gas stoves, access to affordable housing, getting a car that actually can drive where you don't need to plug it in somewhere, where you don't have to spend $30,000 to replace a battery or deal with the unintended consequences of the impacts on your roads. This is why Joe Biden was all upset when people could go and see the gas prices out there. And he was lamenting, oh, if only people didn't have to see those gas prices when they're driving down the street, our lives would be so much better. Yeah. It's much easier for politicians to take control, for progressives to take control of every aspect of your life if people are not made aware of what's happening to them. And I'm sorry, you know, Joe Biden is responsible for the bad stuff. I do dispute this metaphor. Because when the Baltimore Ravens lost that playoff game, right? It wasn't just the quarterback that was blamed for it. It was the team that was blamed for it. In the same way, I don't just blame Joe Biden for all of the bad stuff that's coming down. I blame the team. I blame Joe Biden. I blame the team around him. You know, every bureaucrat out there who wants to, oh, I don't know, and we're going to talk about this later on in the show, every bureaucrat out there who wants to take away a statue celebrating a religious freedom figure or get rid of a photograph that celebrates an iconic moment in American history or goes after Christian colleges or goes after gas stoves or goes after the patent rights owned by historically black colleges and universities in pharmaceutical research. Who wants to circumvent the law and go after guns or go after student loans? All of these things. I don't blame Joe Biden alone. I blame the team around him. Listen, I didn't even get into this. We'll get into the top of the next hour. But the last bit that Joanne Reed had, in fact, I'll just play that last bit. Because, you see what I'm getting at here, folks? All of these little things. You know, Carl, you can tell me, how long was that whole segment? How long is cut number 8? All right, so, the total, anyway, it's over a minute long, and there's so much there that we have to talk about that we haven't talked about yet. So listen, in the next hour, we're going to be joined by Scott Shepard from the Free Enterprise Project and also Robert Bork Jr. talking about the Federal Trade Commission. I'm Andrew Langer. I'm in for Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today.